When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
Welcome to Forever Dog. You can listen to this podcast ad-free on Forever Dog Plus by signing up at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. And make sure to follow us on social at Forever Dog Team and check out all of our podcasts at foreverdogpodcasts.com. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Public Domain Theater. This week, Saki, a.k.a. H.H. Monroe's, Gabriel Ernest and the Music on the Hill, with Kelly Nugent, Lindsay Kaytai, and guest, Patrick Ellers.
Welcome to Public Domain Theater, the podcast of highbrow readings and lowbrow commentary. I'm Lindsay Kaytai.
And I'm Kelly Nugent.
And today we have guest Patrick Ellers, beloved frequent guest on Teen Creeps, comedian, podcaster,
editor of Retcon Punch, co-host of Same Day Shipping and Nintendo Cartridge Society.
Cool.
Thanks for having me, guys.
How are you doing, Patrick?
I am doing well. I saw a guy on a scooter going the wrong way on the street today.
No.
Freaked me out a little bit.
Oh my goodness.
It was on my way over here.
We're in the land of one-way streets.
We are in the land of one-way streets, so maybe he didn't know. And maybe he was like, I'm on a scooter, I don't count as a car.
Maybe he thought that. Wait, question. Was it a zippy scooter or a mobility scooter?
Like a zippy scooter. So it was...
Like a Vespa?
No, less than a Vespa, but more than a Razor.
I pictured mobility scooter, and I was horrified. Glad to hear it wasn't.
That person's in trouble.
That person is definitely in trouble.
Oh, no.
No, this was, he was like standing on it, but it had some kind of motor to it. Not quite a Vespa, not quite a Razor scooter.
Okay.
He was using it to like cheat the system. Be like, I don't have to do what the cars do. I don't have to do what the pedestrians do.
Not quite a Segway either.
That's right.
Okay.
Speaking of Segways, some did you enjoy unholy literature? That was good.
That was excellent. Kelly. Wow.
Kelly. To answer your question, for a long time, no. I actually had a very hard time reading when I was a kid. And I was always paired up with the like absolute slowest reader in our class, whose name was Reed Nolan. It was a good friend of mine. Hey, Reed, I'm putting you on blast.
What an ironic name.
Right? Two E's, though. So that's that's probably why. But... I was a smart kid, but kind of a slow reader. And so they would, when everyone else was like reading quietly, the teachers would send Reed and I out into the hall and we would like read the book together, which was mostly me reading to him.
Oh,
what was the thought process there?
I don't know that.
He was like that. Actually, I'm more of an auditory learner. And you're like, that's funny. I learned from reading out loud.
I learned from being lightly bullied by my friend, which is kind of what it ended up being, right? That like, I think the idea was that I would like pull him along through it. Like, Patrick's smart. He'll, you know, make this happen. But like, you know, I was such a pushover. I'm a pushover now. I don't know why I tried to couch that in something
else. You're a pushover.
Else.
Say it.
I'm a pushover.
Okay.
I'm a bad little boy.
This is a normal interaction.
So this has changed our relationship, I think.
No, I think I am less of a pushover now than I was as a kid.
You are. I've seen you stand up for yourself, and I'm proud of you in the times you do.
Thank you, Kelly.
You're
I feel
welcome.
Like it just happened right now.
You did, and I let you have it.
So I think for a long time I had like a negative association with A, reading, and B, reading out loud. So
sorry to make you do this.
Coming on here. Yeah, I'm like, but I read it a lot now. I've been on your other show a couple times to read those Lodunk novels.
Yeah.
I write about comic books on which I understand is like a book with an asterisk. But
it's just a very different book.
It's just a very different book. And, you know, so I'm reading like 20 comics a week or something like that for Retcon Punch and then writing about them. So. I read an awful lot now and feel very comfortable with picture books. I just read Action Comics 1000. Are you guys going to read Action Comics 1000? It's the 1000th issue 1000 of Action Comics.
Sorry. Okay, this is going to reveal. What the fuck are you talking about?
Action Comics is the comic in which Superman first appeared.
Oh, you know what? Now that you say it, I'm like seeing the typography of Action Comics, where it's like 3D and like swooping at you.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So okay, I'm aware.
It's all heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's all just Superman stories from creators old and new. And they have like some old like archival drawings from like the 50s that were never actually published as Superman stories that they've repurposed into Superman stories. It's got the first Brian Michael Bendis Superman story.
Oh, interesting.
Because Bendis is taking over the character in like July or something. And this is his very first story. He left Marvel Comics so he could come over to DC and write Superman. And his first story about Superman ever is in Action 1000.
Well, let me know how it goes.
It's okay.
Okay. Great.
Cool. Sneak preview.
Don't have super high hopes for it.
Okay, great.
No, I will not be reading that.
You can text me and Lindsay. Mm-hmm. Like, tell us what you think.
Just text you updates?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll do. Just let us know how you
feel. I have trouble reading comics. Like just the format and I'm trying to do both at once. I'd rather just get the words. Thank you.
It is hard. Do you, when you read comics, do you find yourself just reading the words and just like ripping through it?
No, I'll try to like, okay. So I look at the picture and then I read the words.
Right.
And then the next panel, I look at the picture and then I read the words, and I'm breaking it down too much so that I'm losing the flow of the story and it is not enjoyable.
Yeah. And sometimes they'll do that thing too, where like characters are having a conversation and there's like a running narration in like that little narration box.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's like one more level of like, I'm trying to keep track of three things at one time. It's too much.
Yeah.
Too much. Not fun.
For me, I just like, I'll tend to breeze through them too quick. Cause I'm like, oh, I really want to know what happens. So then it'll take me like twice as long, because I'll usually read all the dialogue on a page and then I'll be like, now if I have to look at the pictures. And sometimes I don't know what's wrong with me, but like spatially, I can't understand what's happening sometimes.
Me too.
I'm
like, wait, what?
I'll be like, what is this image?
Storytelling is hard.
Yeah.
And like even the people who are good at it, like sometimes aren't very good at it.
Interesting. Like I've never had any trouble with that for Saga.
Hmm.
I didn't have any trouble with that.
Fiona Staples is a very clear storyteller.
She's a very talented artist.
Mm-hmm.
but I've had it with other books. Like a couple times in Astonishing X-Men, I was like, what is this image? Like, I don't get what's happening.
Well, there are a lot of like X-Men artists, especially like, because X-Men can get like weird as fuck, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, whenever they go into like the astral plane or, you know, anywhere in someone's consciousness, because like half the X-Men have telepathy. That like, you know, artists like Frazier Irving, or there's a bunch of guys like that are just draw these like totally weird, like mindscapes that you like, they don't tell a story so much as like convey an idea.
Yeah. Or a feeling.
Yeah. And that can be hard too. When you're like, I just want to see who's punching Juggernaut. I just want to know who's punching Juggernaut.
It's like a similar feeling. Like if you're reading like fanfic, that's like poorly written, especially when it gets steamy and they don't explain
who's this.
And I'm also like, wait, his hands were coming from behind her, but now they're like at the front. So like, did they switch spots or like what's going on? Like I get very confused.
I mean, I think comics and fanfic have the shared quality that you are an active participant in reading it.
Mm-hmm.
You see a picture, but you have to imagine
connect those dots,
how that actually fits in that space. Just like you've got to imagine their boners and hard pecs and whatnot in fanfic.
Well, like you have to imagine all of that stuff in a book too, but somehow it's like, I don't know, I lose the flow. It's like interrupting my imagining to me.
Yeah. Because you've already imagined it so clearly in your head from the words. And then
it's like divorcing my concentration from my imagination, which really interferes with the flow of the story for me.
Yeah. You can't go like pure imagination on a comic.
Yeah.
Because so much of it is already there for you.
Well. Now to get to something that definitely isn't a comic book.
Give me that not comic book.
All right. So we're going to read two pieces by H.H. Monroe, a.k.a. Gabriel Ernest.
I have never heard of this guy.
I'm sorry, not AKA Gabriel Ernest. I'm sorry. The first story we'd be reading is Gabriel Ernest. And the second one is Music on the Hill.
I have still not heard of this guy.
So okay, AKA Saki. This is a very popular, The Music on the Hill is the second story we'll be reading. AKA Saki. And this is apparently a very prolific short story writer. We've gotten a lot of suggestions for Saki stuff. And if you look up, as I was doing, best short stories, public domain. There's a ton of like people suggesting Saki works. So I'm excited to delve into this.
Is he like a sci-fi guy?
No idea.
We do not know.
Maybe we'll find.
Well, so we've got another bio compiled by producer Brett.
That's the fun thing about the show is that we have not read it. Brett has guided us to the story we will be reading and gives us a little bit of a bio.
This is exciting. It's a try blind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No one knows what's going to happen.
It's fun. I know. It's very fun. So let's know a little bit about Saki.
Please.
So H.H. Monroe is his name, pen name Saki. He was born in 1870 in Akia, British Burma, which was then still part of the British Raj. It was governed from Calcutta under the authority of the Viceroy of India. He was the son of Charles Augustus Monroe, an inspector general for the Indian Imperial Police. Okay. In 1872, on a home visit to England, his mother, Mary Monroe, was charged by a cow.
What?
And the shock caused her to miscarry, and she never recovered and soon died.
Oh, what? My God. It was terrible being a woman.
A cow?
A cow charged her.
So then, in 1896, he decides to move to London. He wants to be a writer. He does some journalism. He does some playwriting. But he found his calling as a short story writer. He wrote over 120 of these in his career. Wow. Most of them are 4 to 5 pages long.
Very short stories.
Very short. A blink. Flash fiction. Monroe was homosexual at a time when in Britain, sexual activity between men was a crime. After the downfall of Oscar Wilde and the Cleveland Street scandal, he decided that part of his life had to be a secret. At the end of World War I, he was 43 and officially overage to enlist, but he refused a commission and joined as the second King Edward's horse as an ordinary trooper.
Wait, he joined as a horse?
That's what
Can
I
Can you
heard.
Do that?
He was like,
this seems like a horse.
He's like, I'm a super straight horse.
I have to hide the fact that I'm gay and a man. That's a pretty good cover.
If you're trying to straight horse, yeah.
He's like, you know what? The horse thing will be what everyone's just fixating on. Right. Like, that's all they'll care about.
Steve seems exceptionally heterosexual.
You know that guy's a guy, right? Yeah, but he's probably straight.
As long as he's straight, I don't care if he's a horse.
So then he transfers to the 22nd Battalion of the Royal Fusiliers. Hope I said that right. In which he rose to the rank of Lance Sergeant. Oh, so then he was like, I'm not a horse anymore. I'm a man.
I'm a real life man.
Do they promote horses to men? Is that like a normal track for the army, for the British Army?
I guess so.
Yeah.
I have two siblings in the U.S. Army, but I don't know anything about the British Army.
I have no idea.
Goes horse, man, chimney sweep.
Oh, that feels like a demotion to me.
And then king.
And the king, I was trying to.
King
I think
right above
Scotland
Jimmy's
Yard way. Might come in between. We're just our Scotland Yard.
Oh, that's a special like
and
branch.
Oh yeah, you have to specialize when you're back in your horse days. You have to start that specialization there.
Yeah,
if you didn't know that early on, you are never going to become Scotland Yard.
No, there are many kings who wish that they had known earlier.
Yeah,
well, too bad. More than once, this guy keeps going back to the battlefield when officially too sick or injured. He keeps going back. Then in November 1916, he was sheltering in a shell crater near Beaumont Hamel, France, during the Battle of the Ancre. He was killed by a German sniper. According to several sources, his last words were, put that bloody cigarette out.
Badass.
But also, like, he's probably like, stop, they can see us.
Yeah, that's,
and then he gets
I
killed.
I feel like I've heard this story before. Yeah. Put that bloody cigarette out.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so here's the thing that's funny.
Put that bloody cigarette out. I'm straight.
He's clearly, like, narking on his friend, right? Who's smoking a cigarette and being like, guy's just trying to enjoy the war, right?
I think so, but I think he also is, like, most, like, I bet it was at night.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, they can see the butt of your cigarette. Stop.
Right.
And the guy's like, I'm just trying to be a cool guy. I'm just trying to chill. And he's like,
and Taki's like, it's against the rules.
He's like, they said once the sun goes down, all cigarettes have to be put out.
Wait, did you join as a horse?
No.
I'm not going to listen to some like low rank horse.
I was born as a man.
And then they're both charged by a cow.
Oh, God. So sad.
That's
so sad.
That's horrifying.
That's the saddest part of this story.
A sad life.
The mom.
I have a hard time having to live
as a closeted gay
man. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of sad
stuff
here.
And getting shot by a German sniper.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah. And like trying to keep going back to war when you're sick because like you don't really have anything else going on.
That's what you think? You think Death Wish? That like
or
he kept
maybe,
re-enlisting?
Well, because he just kept going back
out.
He was
just that devoted to the crown.
Or maybe he had someone that he loved that was out there. He's like, I got to be with them.
Maybe he was telling a lover to put their cigarette out.
Oh, and then maybe he threw himself in front of them.
Yeah, maybe.
We'll never know.
I bet that was it.
Okay, ready? We're
gonna
start.
That's a nice story.
That's a nice story.
I like that
story. Oh, that's a nice story. Okay.
Is my mom here?
Yeah.
Oh, hi.
If my mother was here, she would say, after almost any fun thing that we would say, pretty weird, Pa.
Okay, is that to you, Patrick?
Yes.
Pa.
Not Pat.
Pretty weird, Pa. Mm-hmm.
Pretty weird, Pa.
Wow.
We don't know how it's spelled, Pa.
P-A-H?
I don't know. Wow.
I think it's P-A-A-H.
Yeah.
Pa.
And then maybe there's like umlaut over one of those A's.
Yeah.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Our first story is Gabriel Ernest. There is a wild beast in your woods, said the artist Cunningham as he was being driven to the station. It was the only remark he had made during the drive. But as Van Cheele had talked incessantly, his companion's silence had not been noticeable. A stray fox or two and some resident weasels. Nothing more formidable, said Van Cheele.
I feel like I could take a couple of weasels.
Yeah.
Right? Just like one-on-one.
If we were playing Far Cry, you could get killed by a weasel.
Oh.
The artist said nothing. What did you mean about a wild beast? Said Van Cheele later. When they were on the platform.
Later. He's just been thinking about it.
He's been sitting for hours and he's like, what the fuck is he talking about?
He never responded to me about the hunting thing.
And he's like, he did not respond.
Drive.
Nothing. My imagination. Here's the train, said Cunningham. Okay.
You artsy fartsy motherfucker.
That afternoon, Van Cheele went for one of his frequent rambles through his woodland property. He had a stuffed bittern in his study, and he knew the names of quite a number of wildflowers, so his aunt had probably some justification in describing him as a great naturalist. At any rate...
Code for gay.
Code for gay.
Great naturalist.
Such a great naturalist. You know.
At any rate, he was a great walker. It was his custom to take mental notes of everything he saw during his walks.
I'm great at things.
Not so much for the purpose of assisting contemporary science as to provide topics for conversation afterwards.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
I don't want to have to spend any time with this
guy. No, this guy's tiring. When the bluebells began to show themselves in flower, he made a point of informing everyone of the fact. The season of the year might have warned his hearers of the likelihood of such an occurrence, but at least they felt that he was being absolutely frank with them. What Van Cheele saw on this particular afternoon was, however, something far removed from his ordinary range of experience. On a shelf of smooth stone overhanging a deep pool in the hollow of an oak coppice, a boy of about 16 lay asprawl, drying his wet brown limbs luxuriously in the sun.
Oh.
Nice.
Wait, is this the beast?
Is it the beast?
Is it the beast?
It could be.
Oh, shit.
Little pre-beast.
Pre-beast.
He's a preemie.
His wet hair, parted by a recent dive, lay close to his head, and his light brown eyes, so light that there was an almost tigerish gleam in them, were turned toward Van Cheele with a certain lazy watchfulness. It was an unexpected apparition, and Van Cheele found himself engaging in the novel process of thinking before he spoke.
Van Cheele, you asshole.
Where on earth could this wild-looking boy hail from? The miller's wife had lost a child some 2 months ago, supposed to have been swept away by the mill race. But that had been a mere baby, not a half-grown lad.
So his first thought is, maybe this is a baby that grew up really fast?
Yeah, he's like, well,
there was a baby.
Maybe it's...
Maybe It's no,
him, but, the preemie.
But maybe it but is.
He's not a baby. I'm known for my thinking. So
I'm just going to speak.
What are you doing there? He demanded. Obviously sunning myself, replied the boy. Where do you live? Here, in these woods. You can't live in the woods, said Van Cheele.
Another
Van
classic Cheele. Kelly character.
They are very nice woods, said the boy, with a touch of patronage in his voice. Where do you sleep at night? I don't sleep at night. That's my busiest time. Van Cheele began to have an irritated feeling that he was grappling with a problem that was eluding him.
Van Cheele's a fucking idiot. Van Cheele's an idiot.
No, it gets so much
the
worse.
The writer is like, this guy's a fucking idiot.
What do you feed on? He asked. Flesh, hold said on. The boy.
What?
And he pronounced the word with slow relish as though he were tasting it.
Oh my
he must
goodness.
Have known that that was the answer he was going to get yeah. because he said, what do you feed on? Otherwise, you just say, what do you eat?
Yeah. Well, he was saying he hunts.
what did you guys feed on earlier today?
Oh, I had a cheese enchilada. I fed on a cheese enchilada.
I fled on a roasted chicken and pesto sandwich.
Oh.
What did you feed on?
I fed on some eggs and toast.
Cool.
See, none of us said flesh.
Flesh.
I fed on a cheese enchilada.
Ooh, baby. Flesh? What flesh? Since it interests you.
Wait, can you be like the high anxiety Jerry Seinfeld? Flesh?
What flesh? Yes. Okay, great. Now we know. I'll do that from now on. Since it interests you, rabbits, wild fowl, hares, poultry, lambs in their season, children when I can get any. Whoa, they're usually dude. Too well locked in at night when I do most of my hunting.
Just not the miller's wife?
This is symbolic AF.
Yeah. It's quite 2 months since I tasted child flesh. Ignoring the chafing nature of the last remark, Van Cheele tried to draw the boy on the subject of possible poaching operations.
God. Chafing?
You're talking rather through your hat when you speak of feeding on hares. It's a struggle there.
They don't all have to be like that.
Considering the nature of the boy's toilet, the simile was hardly an apt one. Our hillside hares aren't easily caught. At night, I hunt on 4 feet, was the somewhat cryptic response.
I suppose you mean that you hunt with a dog?
Hazarded Van Cheele. The boy rolled slowly over onto his back and laughed a weird low laugh.
You're an idiot.
That was pleasantly like a chuckle and disagreeably like a snarl. So yeah, he was like and he's like, oh my God, what is this laugh?
He hunts on all fours. Chasing.
He hunts on all fours.
Symbolic AF.
Yeah. I don't fancy any dog would be very anxious for my company, especially at night. Van Cheele began to feel there was something positively uncanny about the strange-eyed, strange-tongued youngster. Okay. I can't have you staying in these woods, he declared authoritatively. I fancy you'd rather have me here than in your house.
It's the beast inside
said the boy.
Us all.
Are you kidding me?
The boy, what are you, come on.
Why are you feasting?
You'd rather have me here than in your house?
I cannot get my shadow to stick.
The prospect of this wild, nude animal in Van Cheele's primly ordered house was certainly an alarming one.
Is that a detail that we glossed over before? Boy is nude?
No, we did gloss over before. He's nude.
Boy is nude.
There was like, bare-skinned.
He's like tan.
His skin is shining.
He's sunning. He was just swimming.
Mm-hmm. I guess my imagination was just modest.
No, yeah, you pictured him in like a
trunks.
Swimming dress.
Yeah, I pictured him in a little loincloth.
Me too. Like a little, or maybe just like a leaf. Just like a leaf laying on his.
He's Adam. Joe. He's the original man.
Ween Ray.
Right.
Okay. If you don't go, I shall have to make you, said Van Cheele. The boy turned like a flash, plunged into the pool, and in a moment had flung his wet and glistening body halfway up the bank where Van Cheele was standing.
Oh, damn.
In an otter, the movement would not have been remarkable. In a boy, Van Cheele found it sufficiently startling. His foot slipped as he made an involuntary backward movement, and he found himself almost prostrate on the slippery, weed-grown bank. with those tigerish yellow eyes not very far from his own. Almost instinctively, he half raised his hand to his throat. The boy laughed again, a laugh in which the snarl had nearly driven out the chuckle. And then, with another one of his astonishing lightning movements, plunged out of view into a yielding tangle of weed and fern.
What, he just jumps into the bushes?
Astonishing like, lightning movements!
I'm the boy. Pew, pew.
What an extraordinary wild animal, said Van Cheel as he picked himself up.
It was a boy, you dumbass.
He's a boy. And then he recalled.
That you are attracted to.
No, yeah, yes. You are heavily attracted to him.
He is symbolic of the homosexual leanings within you.
And that you try and keep them hidden in the woods, but he keeps saying, I'm sure you'd rather just have it in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Van Cheel.
Van Cheel.
Van Cheel.
Van Cheel.
And then he recalled Cunningham's remark. There's a wild beast in your woods. Walking slowly homeward, Van Cheel began to turn over in his mind various local occurrences which might be traceable to the existence of this astonishing young savage. Something had been thinning the game in the woods lately. Poultry had been missing from the farms, hares were growing unaccountably scarcer, and complaints had reached him of lambs being carried off bodily from the hills.
Hold on. How is he, like, putting this together? Like, the boy said, I'm eating all of these things.
He's like, hold on a tick.
I think I figured something out.
Things have been eaten, of which are the same, and the forest, and the boy said that he...
And that man said there's a beast something, Van Cheel.
He's like, Van Cheel, you've done it again.
Van Cheel, world's worst detective.
Was it possible that this wild boy was hunting the countryside in company with some clever poacher dogs? He had spoken of hunting four-footed by night, but then again, he had hinted strangely at no dog.
He didn't hint.
He said,
I don't hunt with a dog.
Yeah, that's pretty cut and dry.
At no dog caring to come near him, especially at night. It was certainly puzzling. And then, as Van Cheel ran his mind over the various depredations that had been committed during the last month or two, he came suddenly to a dead stop. Alike in his walk and his speculations. The child missing from the mill 2 months ago. The what? Accepted theory was that it had tumbled into the mill race and been swept away.
He only thought of the one baby at first, and now he's like, oh, right. I think that other one.
I think
this
he
is the same baby.
Still talking about the same baby.
Yeah.
He's saying maybe he's a baby.
What? No.
Oh, no. He's saying the baby got et.
Yes.
But the mother had always declared she heard a shriek on the hillside of the house in the opposite direction from the water. It was unthinkable, of course, but he wished that the boy had not made that uncanny remark about child flesh eaten 2 months ago. Such dreadful things should not even be said in fun.
Is that a strange thing for him to wish?
No.
I think you definitely don't want someone to be like, oh, by the way, I also eat the flesh of children.
Soup's normal wish.
He's like, stop me if I'm crazy.
Like, he shouldn't have said that, right?
That was like weird,
it's
right?
It's just baby.
I wish he hadn't have said that. Maybe you do. Maybe you
I don't
do.
Know. I'm just like feeling it out.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't
like,
know.
I'm still trying to figure out how I feel about it. Like, I've seen a lot of reactions and like, I'm just trying to, I don't know where I land.
Look, here's the thing. I'm very dumb. I have a very low IQ. I am still grasping at what's going on. I don't know if that's a strange thing to wish or not. You tell me, person who's not an idiot.
Van Cheel, contrary to his usual wont, did not feel disposed to be communicative about his discovery in the wood.
What? Well, wonders never cease.
His position as a parish counselor and justice of the peace seemed somehow compromised.
They gave him those positions?
You know what? I think they just tell him that. He's a village idiot. And they're like, yeah, that's right. You're the justice of the peace.
And
we
the
come
parish,
to you to get married.
Counselor.
Yeah, they're like, they're the thesaurus counselor. And your domain is the woods. And he's like, oh, jolly. Gee, Willikers, I can't wait to tell them about the bluebells.
He's such a great naturalist.
You're so good at walking.
And you're great talker.
His position as a parish counselor and justice of the peace seemed somehow compromised by the fact that he was harboring a personality of such doubtful repute on his property. There was even a possibility that a heavy bill of damages for raided lambs and poultry might be laid at his door.
Just doesn't want to pay for it.
At dinner that night, he was quite unusually silent. "Where's your voice gone to?" said his aunt. "One would think you had seen a wolf."
I hate it in stories where people go, "Well, you might just think that you saw the exact thing that you saw." But that's great. I'm exaggerating for comedic effect, but hitting on it.
I mean, that's like too prophetic and too cute. Like, yeah. That's, yeah.
She knows. She knows. Fucking knows about this guy.
She orchestrated the whole thing.
Yeah.
Van Cheele, who was not familiar with the old saying, thought the remark rather foolish.
Van Cheele is such an idiot.
He's just like, not familiar.
is that an old saying? You look like you've seen a wolf?
No, I've never heard that. A ghost.
Yes. You look like you've seen a ghost.
I guess it used to be a saying.
If he had seen a wolf on his property, his tongue would have been extraordinarily busy with the subject.
At breakfast next morning, Van Cheele was conscious that his feeling of uneasiness regarding yesterday's episode had not wholly disappeared. Mm. And he resolved to go by train to the neighboring cathedral town, hunt up Cunningham, and learn from him what he had really seen that had prompted the remark about a wild beast in the woods.
Man, he could have... Today, text.
Yeah, you wouldn't even have to take a train.
He has to go on a train today. To a cathedral town.
Snap a photo of that.
Oh,
boy.
Snapchat.
Yeah. Probably Snapchat that boy. Put the little puppy face on him.
It would just look exactly the same.
Shit, it's a wolf.
You look as though you've seen a wolf.
With this resolution taken, his usual cheerfulness partially returned, and he hummed a bright little melody as he sauntered to the morning room for his customary cigarette. As he entered the room, the melody made way abruptly for a pious invocation. Gracefully asprawl on the ottoman, in
what?
An attitude of almost exaggerated repose.
Is that the fucking boy?
The boy.
Was the boy. Boy of the
boy.
Oh
my God!
The boy!
The boy is in his fucking house.
Oh, shit's about to get steamy.
What?
No, I'm spread his legs. I wasn't looking for it.
Oh.
He is the boy.
He is the boy.
No, the boy is the boy in the mirror. Sexuality.
It's everywhere. He can't hide from
it. He can't
escape
it.
We are all boy. Hashtag we are boy.
We are boy. Hashtag we are boy.
He was drier than when Van Cheele had last seen him.
Okay.
But no other alteration was noticeable.
I noticed your dryer.
Toilet.
His toilet. Does that mean his look?
I'm not sure.
Or like in his cleanliness?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Toiletries. Yeah. So it means like hygiene?
A personal appearance? I don't know.
What did he say about his toilet?
He's drier.
No other alteration was noticeable apart from being drier.
Okay. Wetness
so he
registered.
He's still nude. He's dry and nude.
Degree of wetness was registering with this idiot. We can't depend on much more.
Van Cheele.
Oh, Van Cheele. How dare you come here? Asked Van Cheele furiously. You told me I was not to stay in the woods, said the boy calmly. But not to come here. Supposing my aunt should see you. And with a view to minimizing that catastrophe, Van Cheele hastily obscured as much of his unwelcome guest as possible under the folds of a morning post.
Wait, so he just like threw a newspaper on him?
He just threw a newspaper on his junk.
My aunt can't see you.
Get a newspaper on your peen.
Put this on. It's still folded though?
Put this on.
Folded.
You fool. This is reading material.
Oh, I thought it was a pair of shorts.
He's going to read that D.
Oh, yeah.
At that moment, his aunt entered the room.
Oh, no.
This is a poor boy who has lost his way.
Oh, man.
And lost his memory. He doesn't know who he is or where he comes from, explained Van Cheele desperately.
Van Cheele,
glancing apprehensively at the waif's face to see whether he was going to add inconvenient candor to his other savage propensities.
Oh, my God.
What is he afraid the kid is going to say other than I eat children and then they can like take action against him?
He could literally just be like, I don't know what the fuck this guy is doing in my house. Like, who is this?
But you guys, he's very stupid.
I know, he's very stupid.
Van
he's
Cheele.
Very
poor Van
stupid.
Cheele. Miss Van Cheele was enormously interested.
She's like, oh my fucking God.
Oh, wow.
Me, everything.
Christmas came early.
You even wrapped it in some newspaper.
Perhaps his underlinen is marked, she suggested.
Underlinen?
His underpants.
She's going to try and look underneath
the boy is not wearing underpants.
Oh, my God. She's going to lift up the paper and then she's going to be like, Sunny with a chance of meatballs.
Oh, this gets fun.
Oh, God.
Where would the meatballs come from if it's a sunny day? You need clouds, Kelly.
I'm sorry. In flash flood.
I never want to hear flash flood in regard to a butt ever again.
He's eating butt all that flood. Raw meat. It's not good. Oh, my God. He's like, I'm very ill.
No. I'm sick. I'm confused.
No. Okay, what happens?
He seems to have lost most of that, too, said Van Cheele.
Oh, my God.
Making frantic little grabs at the Morning Post to keep it in its place.
Oh, my God. He's, like, jerking him off. He's like, oh, God, I'll just rub it.
Oops, oops. A naked homeless child appealed to Miss Van Cheele as warmly as a stray kitten or derelict puppy would have done.
Huh.
We must do all we can for him, she decided. And in a very short time, a messenger dispatched to the rectory, where a page boy was kept, had returned with a suit of pantry clothes and the necessary accessories of shirt, shoes, collar, etc.
Pantry clothes?
Pantry clothes? What kind of rich nonsense is this?
I don't know.
Pantry clothes?
The rectory keeps pantry clothes.
Oh, wait, the rectory?
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
Is it
homeless or like a...
Oh.
That they would have like resources like food or...
Yeah. My guess is it's...
giveaways for the unfortunate.
If a messenger was dispatched to the rectory where a page boy was kept, maybe they're page boy clothes.
Page boy. Okay.
Like, they might just be like... It might have said this in a weird way, but it's like, returned... With a set of clothes they got from the pantry.
Okay.
Like,
I'm still
he
like,
went to the cupboard and got
I'm still
some clothes.
Mostly question marks, but I think I get it. Mm-hmm.
They looked behind the box of Honey Nut Cheerios.
And there's like a little.
Found an outfit.
And they're a like, oh, it turned out we bought three little jars of crushed red pepper because we kept forgetting that we
That's
already
right.
had them. There are some pantry clothes. Clothed, clean, and groomed, the boy lost none of his uncanniness in Van Cheele's eyes. But his aunt found him sweet. We must call him something till we know who he really is, she said.
Why don't they talk to him?
Gabriel Ernest, I think. Oh. Those are nice, suitable names. Van Cheele agreed, but he privately doubted whether they were being grafted onto a nice, suitable child. His misgivings were not diminished by the fact that his staid and elderly spaniel had bolted out of the house at the first incoming of the boy.
Classic.
And now obstinately remained shivering and yapping at the farther end of the orchard. Well, the canary usually is oh God, it's like
this
the
is
last
like fucking
a book we just read on Team Creeps, One Evil Summer.
Yeah, where all the animals fucking hate them.
Yep.
That means he's evil.
Obviously.
He's
gonna eat
him. Don't make him evil.
Do we have another fucking short story where pets are injured, Brett?
Oh no.
Brett
is okay. He says no.
He's shaking his head no.
Because I'm about to scream.
I just wanted to pause on the phrase, the coming of the boy, the incoming of the boy. What was it?
The incoming of the boy. While the canary, usually as vocally industrious as Van Cheele himself, had put itself on an allowance of frightened cheeps. More than ever, he was resolved to consult Cunningham without loss of time.
Oh my God. He's like, I got to get to Cunningham.
And the canary's like, all right. Two more cheeps. I'm going to do two more cheeps. All right, three. I can do three.
As he drove off to the station, his aunt was arranging that Gabriel Ernest should help her to entertain the infant members of her Sunday school class at tea that afternoon.
He's going
to
eat them?
He's going to eat them.
Cunningham was not at first disposed to be communicative.
Oh, man.
My mother died of some brain trouble, he explained, so you will... understand why I'm averse to dwelling on anything of an impossibly fantastic nature that I may see or think that I have seen. Come out with it, Cunningham. Just say, I saw a boy who's eating stuff.
Yeah, but maybe he's like, it may have been like a hallucination thing because my mom had this brain thing.
He knows it runs in the family.
He's like, oh God, it's just a matter of time, right? Mm-hmm.
My grandfather had Alzheimer's. I'm terrified of the day that my mind starts to slip. And the only way to like get anything out of me is to, like put a Super Nintendo controller in my hand.
Oh my God.
Well,
that's what it's going to be. That's what it's going to be.
Hopefully by that time, it's like they've had advances. You know what I mean?
In what? Oh, in
medicine,
like, yes.
Shit. Brain.
And like just like a Placidoku or something.
I thought you were going to be like, you'll have a PlayStation 5 controller in your hand.
Oh, nice. That's all we'll have reached by that point. How old are you? Are you 72?
Right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what did you see? Persisted Van Cheele.
Oh my God.
What I thought I saw was something so extraordinary that no really sane man could dignify it with the credit of having actually happened. I was standing, the last evening I was with you, half hidden in the hedge growth by the orchard gate, watching the dying glow of the sunset. Suddenly, I became aware of a naked boy, a bather from some neighboring pool.
Oh my God.
I took him to be.
Why is he always bathing?
He loves to bathe.
Who was standing out on the bare hillside, also watching the sunset.
He was as nude as the hill was bare.
He was as nude
as the... And how wet would you say he was?
Oh, yeah. His toilet. Degree of wetness. His pose was so suggestive of some wild fawn of pagan myth that I instantly wanted to engage him as a model. Wow, what the hell?
Nice.
This book or story. And in another moment, I think I should have hailed him. But just then, the sun dipped out of view and all the orange and pink slid out of the landscape, leaving it cold and gray. And at that same moment, an astounding thing happened. The boy vanished, too.
Oh, my God.
What? Vanished away into nothing? Asked Van Cheele excitedly.
What? Tim Allen.
Tim Allen. Yeah.
We'll just cycle through 90 sitcom characters.
Cunningham is the neighbor whose face you never see.
Oh, Watson.
Watson. Watson?
That's not right.
Wilson.
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 Wilson. I was like, Watson. Wait, no.
Oh.
Sherlock?
Sherlock Holmes.
Elementary. Elementary.
The worst detective and the best detective. That's a team up I want to see is Van Cheele and Sherlock.
Van Cheele. No, that is the dreadful part of it, answered the artist. On the open hillside where the boy had been standing a second ago stood a large wolf, blackish in color, with gleaming fangs and cruel yellow eyes. You may think, but Van Cheele did not stop for anything as futile as thought. Already he was tearing at top speed towards the station.
Oh my God, he just dance away.
He ran.
Mid-sentence from, what's the other guy? Cunningham.
Yeah, his legs started spinning like he's in a Scooby-Doo cartoon. Right.
Yeah. And then he just ran all the way home. He ran from that neighboring cathedral town.
And wee, all the way home.
Oh. He could have just been texting this.
Seriously. He could have texted the like the little air poof that means that you ran away or a fart.
Is there a good emoji for boy is werewolf?
You do like
boy face and then dog.
Yeah, and then dog.
Boy face dog.
Or you do, here's what you do. You do sun and then boy and then moon and then dog.
That's good. And you separate them by a semicolon.
Yeah.
That's good.
Perfect.
That's great. Good. You did it.
Thanks.
He dismissed the idea of a telegram. Gabriel Ernest is a werewolf was hopelessly inadequate effort at conveying the situation, and his aunt would think it was a code message to which he had omitted to give her the key. His one hope was that he might reach home before sundown. The cab which he chartered at the other end of the railway journey bore him with what seemed exasperating slowness along the country roads, which were pink and mauve with the flush of the sinking sun.
Flesh.
His aunt was putting away some unfinished jams and cake when he arrived. Where's Gabriel Ernest? He almost screamed. He's taking the little Toop child home, said his aunt.
Sorry.
Toop.
Toop?
Toop. Toop. It's a name.
T-O-P. Toop.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I'm Jimmy Toop.
I thought you were saying
Jimmy Ted.
Tube child.
Yeah, no. Me too.
Like a child that has to be kept in a tube.
Yeah.
Oh, bubble boy.
Mm-hmm.
The bubble boy. The bubble boy.
Oh my God. So much Seinfeld tonight.
Yeah.
He's taking the little tube child home, said his aunt. It was getting so late, I thought it wasn't safe to let it go back alone. Doesn't it?
Let it?
Yeah.
All right. Maybe his aunt.
They've referred to children as it before.
Yeah.
In this story.
There were a lot more, like, let the child pick their pronoun.
Very progressive.
Sure. Let's be generous.
Yeah. Let's think nicely of these people.
Yeah, even though that wasn't at all the case.
Oh, no.
I thought it wasn't safe to let it go back alone. What a lovely sunset, isn't it? But Van Cheele, although not oblivious of the glow in the western sky, did not stay to discuss its beauties. At a speed for which
he's sprinting away. He's sprinting everywhere.
At a speed for which he was scarcely geared, he raced along the narrow lane that led.
He's like, whoa!
Is he like a little bit tubby?
Yeah, I think so.
Aww.
Now I love Van
Cheele. He's so good at walking, though.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a great naturalist.
Yeah, he's a great naturalist. He's just like a little nerdy boy.
Yeah, he's a nerdy boy.
Aww. Yeah, we would probably see a lot of ourselves in him if we met in real life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But also, he's dumb.
Yeah.
He's very dumb.
At a speed for which he was scarcely geared, he raced along the narrow lane that led to the home of the Toops. On one side ran the swift current of the mill stream. On the other rose the stretch of bare hillside. A dwindling rim of red sun showed still on the skyline, and the next turning must bring him in view of the ill-assorted couple he was pursuing. Then the color went suddenly out of things, and a gray light settled itself with a quick shiver over the landscape. Van Cheele heard a shrill wail of fear and stopped running. Oh, sorry. It very abruptly ended before it seemed like it was going to. So you really get the climax of the book.
Oh my God. Was it like a lot more stuff at the bottom?
Yeah.
Oh no. Okay.
Sorry.
Nothing was ever seen again of the Toop child or Gabriel Ernest, but the latter's discarded garments were found lying around the road.
Wait. So,
the latter.
Wait, so wait, Toop or Gabriel? So Gabriel's clothes.
Gabriel's clothes.
Okay.
So it was assumed that the child had fallen into the water and that the boy had stripped and jumped in a vain endeavor to save him.
Fucking fake. Why do they fucking think that? Why would they think that?
What else are you going to think? I don't know. This nude orphan boy kidnapped our child. He stripped
turned
down
into
first.
A wolf. Yeah. Van Cheele and some workmen who were nearby at the time testified to having heard a child scream loudly just near the spot where the clothes were found.
Classic.
Connected? Maybe.
Wait, really?
No, that's me. That's...
I was like, oh, the story took a weird turn.
Weird, self-aware. Mrs. Toop, who had 11 other... who had 11 other children.
So she's like, whatever.
Whatever. Was decently like, oh, resigned God. To her bereavement.
Oh, man.
She's but, like, I couldn't really afford that one anyway. That's why I never named him and we just called him It.
And this was how the story, the child called It, uh-huh. was named.
Mrs. Van Cheele sincerely mourned her lost foundling. It was on her initiative that a memorial brass was put up in the parish church to, quote, Gabriel Ernest, an unknown boy who bravely sacrificed his life for another, unquote. Van Cheele gave way to his aunt in most things, but he flatly refused to subscribe to the Gabriel Ernest memorial.
Wait, so he just didn't go? Maybe he's like,
I think maybe he refused to subscribe to it.
Oh, I see.
He didn't want any part of their newsletter.
This is
subscribe.
It.
That's it. Yeah,
that's how the story ends.
That's why I went, whoop.
Oh, sorry. Oh, my God.
I did, like, two-thirds of the way down, but then all of a sudden there's a bunch of shit.
Okay, let's look at this next one to make sure.
Just quick side note. I wrote a short story in college about a boy who thought he was a werewolf.
Oh.
And the way that the class was structured is that, like, you handed in a copy to the professor, and they read it and said, like, we'll be discussing Patrick's story in class, and then had you, like, reproduce it for everyone. And I, when he was like, we're going to do Patrick's story, Peter is a werewolf. I rewrote the ending for half of them so that he actually turned into a werewolf at the end and like ate his friends.
Oh my gosh.
So the class was split 50-50 between people who like was just, you know, like a normal story of you thought there was something magical about you and it turns out, you know, nothing special. And then the other half where he thought he was a werewolf and he destroyed his friends.
That's fucked up.
And it was a great like 10-15 minute conversation about the story before people started like flipping to the back to be like, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
You're so tricky.
Yeah.
That's very funny.
I had
That's
a very,
very
good time.
Funny.
Okay, we're gonna start the music on the hill. Sylvia Seltine ate her breakfast in the morning room at Yesney with a pleasant sense of ultimate victory, such as a fervent iron side might have permitted herself on the morrow of Worcester fight.
Huh?
Okay.
I didn't get the moral part, but I get the rest of it.
She was scarcely pugnacious by temperament, but belonged to that more successful class of fighters who are pugnacious by circumstance. Fate had willed that her life should be occupied with a series of small struggles, usually with the odds slightly against her, and usually she had just managed to come through winning. And now she felt that she had brought her hardest and certainly her most important struggle to a successful issue. To have married Mortimer Seltune.
Mortimer Seltune?
No.
Are you kidding me?
Dead Mortimer, as his more intimate enemies called him, in the teeth of the cold hostility of his family.
The tool man's back.
And in spite of his unaffected indifference to women, was indeed an achievement that he had needed some determination and adroitness to carry through. Yesterday, she had brought her victory to its concluding stage by wrenching her husband away from town and its group of satellite watering places and settling him down in the vocabulary of her kind in this remote wood-girt manor farm that which was his country house. You must never let Mortimer to go. Let's try that again.
Take two.
You will never get Mortimer to go, his mother had said carpingly. But if he once goes...
Carp.
What is it? Carpingly. But if he once goes, he'll stay. Yes, and he throws almost as much a spell over him as town does. One cannot... okay. This woman is... lost her mind.
She's so carpish.
Like, uh-oh. Mama had a stroke in her sentence again.
One can understand what holds him to town, but Yesney. And the dowager had shrugged her shoulders.
Oh.
Is Yesney, Yesney a location, is, a bar? What is Yesney?
Yesney is...
Yesney is the pugnacious woman, right?
Wait. No. Yesney is the house.
Mm.
Okay.
Is the farmhouse.
Okay.
There was a somber, almost savage wildness about Yesney that was certainly not likely to appeal to townbred tastes, and Sylvia, notwithstanding her name, was accustomed to nothing more sylvan than leafy Kensington. She looked on the country as something excellent and wholesome in its way, which was apt to become troublesome if you had encouraged it overmuch. Distrust of town life had been a new thing with her.
It's not even city life. It's town life. Times have changed, man.
Born of her marriage with Mortimer, and she had watched with satisfaction the gradual fading of what she called the German Street look in his eyes, as the woods and heather of Yesney had closed in on them yesternight. Her willpower and strategy had prevailed. Mortimer would stay. Outside the morning room windows was a triangular slope of turf, which the indulgent might call a lawn. And beyond its low edge,
if you were being truly generous, one might call it a lawn, but it's really more of a patch.
I prefer triangle.
And beyond its low hedge of neglected fuchsia bushes, a steeper slope of heather and bracken dropped down into cavernous combs undergrown with oak and yew. In its wild open savagery, in its wild open savagery, there seemed a stealthy linking of the joy of life with the terror of unseen things. Sylvia smiled complacently as she gazed.
Complacently.
She's like, la la la.
Unknown thing.
Smiling complacently.
As she gazed with a school of art appreciation at the landscape.
Know your place, Sylvia.
A school of art appreciation?
Oh, man.
Ugh.
And then, of a sudden, she almost shuddered. It is very wild, she said to Mortimer, who had joined her. One could almost think that in such a place, the worship of Pan had never quite died out.
And they laughed as the boring people they were.
The worship of Pan never has died out, said Mortimer.
Said old dead Mortimer.
What is Mortimer doing in town?
Seriously.
Worshipping Pan.
Worshipping Pan. Maybe his voice is like,
other newer gods have drawn aside his votaries from time to time, but he is the nature god to whom all must come back at last. He has been called the father
of all
the gods.
He's like a weakened Bill Clinton.
But most his children have been stillborn.
That's what he is.
Deathbed Bill Clinton is what he is. DBBC.
Sylvia was religious in an honest, vaguely devotional kind of way, and did not like to hear her beliefs spoken of as mere aftergrowths, but it was at least something new and hopeful to hear dead Mortimer speak with such energy and conviction on any subject.
Oh my God.
You don't really believe in Pan, she asked incredulously.
I've been a fool in most things,
oh said Mortimer quietly.
But I'm not such a fool as not to believe in Pan when I'm down here.
Wait.
So he only believes in Pan when he's down there.
So but, wait, he's the one who said the thing about Pan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I got confused. I thought it was her.
No. He said
she's
it.
All, she's all devout.
Yeah, she's devout. She's like, what the fuck, you believe in Pan?
Yes. And she's like, what the fuck, you're offending my sense of God.
Yes.
And he's like,
And if you're wise, you
we
won't.
We have slaves.
And if
work
you're
on our governor's mansion from the local prison.
And if you're wise, you won't disbelieve in him too boastfully while you're in his country. It was not till a week later, when Sylvia had exhausted the attractions.
Every time it's your voice again, I'm like, what? It's such a jarring turn back into a lively Kelly.
Lively Kelly. When Sylvia had exhausted the attractions of the woodland walks round Yessney, that she ventured on a tour of inspection of the farm buildings. A farmyard suggested in her mind a scene of cheerful bustle, with the churns and flails and smiling dairymaids and teams of horses drinking knee-deep in duck-crowded ponds. As she wandered among the gaunt gray buildings of Yessney Manor Farm, her first impression was one of crushing stillness and desolation. As though she had happened on some lone, deserted homestead long given over to owls and cobwebs. Then came a sense of furtive, watchful hostility, the same shadow of unseen things that seemed to lurk in the wooded combs and coppices.
Do you guys have a bead on the story yet? Like, what's happening? Where's this going?
I think some weird... I think there's a naked boy.
Yeah,
there's gonna be a naked boy.
Just the last story again.
He'll be like sprightly and fun.
Oh, okay.
Maybe, but maybe he'll be evil. I don't know.
I'm just saying we're pretty deep into the story and we have not met the tempting young boy yet.
Pan, he's coming. A satyr.
Pan, I believe in Pan when I'm here.
You do best to not disbelieve too strongly.
From behind heavy doors and shuttered windows came the restless stamp of hoof or rasp of chain halter, and at times a muffled bellow from some stalled beast. From a distant comer, a shaggy dog watched her with intent, unfriendly eyes as she drew
voiced
near.
Voiced by Tim Allen.
As she drew near, it slipped quietly into its kennel and slipped out again as noiselessly when she had passed by. A few hens questing for food under a rick stole away under a gate at her approach.
All these animals
driving
do not like
all
her.
The animals go away.
This is the animals retreating again.
Yeah, except she's the evil thing.
Maybe she's evil.
Oh.
I mean, she's evil because she keeps bringing her husband back from the town where he is almost certainly cavorting with beautiful young men.
Yeah.
And she's back from the dead.
Yeah, he's dead.
He's dead Mortimer.
Dead Mortimer. It's kind of fucked up she calls him that.
Everybody calls him that, apparently.
It was like his enemies called her that. Dead Mortimer!
Dead Mortimer!
Sylvia felt that if she had come across any human beings in this wilderness of barn and byre, they would have fled wraith-like from her gaze. At last, turning a corner quickly, she came upon a living thing that did not fly from her. A stretch in a pool of mud was an enormous sow, gigantic beyond the town woman's wildest computation of swine flesh.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Wow. And speedily alert to... resent and, if necessary, repel the unwanted.
Is she about
intrusion?
To get charged by a sow?
She's about to have a miscarriage.
Oh, God.
It was Sylvia's turn to make an unobtrusive retreat. As she threaded her way past rickyards and cowsheds and long blank walls, she started suddenly at a strange sound. The echo of a boy's laughter. Golden. Jan, the only boy employed on the farm, a tow-headed, wizen-faced yokel.
Okay, wow, that was a roller coaster. Yeah, I was like, okay, what does he look like?
A good turn.
Corn silk hair and an old fucking face.
And a fucking couple of 2 buck teeth in his mouth going, yolk.
Wearing just a pair of overalls.
Yeah. Sucking on a thing of wheat.
Just sucking on that wheat.
Wizen-faced yokel was visibly at work on a potato clearing halfway up the nearest hillside, and Mortimer, when questioned, knew of no other probable or possible begetter of the hidden mockery that had ambushed Sylvia's retreat. The memory of that untraceable echo was added to her other impressions of a furtive, sinister something that hung around Yessney. Of Mortimer she saw very little. Farm and woods and trout streams seemed to swallow him up from dawn till dusk.
He is avoiding the shit out of her. He's like, oh, grass, a tree.
He's obviously so near death.
Oh, yeah. Grass, a tree.
I love it out in nature.
It is where I will return shortly.
Maybe someday I will be a great naturalist.
But not much of a talker. Once, following the directions she had seen him take in the morning, she came to an open space in a nut copse, further shut in by a huge yew trees, in the center of which stood a stone pedestal Sir Matthew.
You choose me.
Surmounted by a small bronze figure of a youthful Pan.
Oh my fucking God.
Oh, fuck. It was a beautiful piece of workmanship, but her attention was chiefly held by the fact that a newly cut bunch of grapes had been placed as an offering at its feet. Is he fucking worshiping Pan out there?
I think he's worshiping Pan.
Is deathbed Bill Clinton a Pan worshiper?
Shit.
He said he believes in Pan.
He's like,
right?
He said, when he's down there, he does.
And he was like, bitch, don't mock my God.
Bitch, don't mock my God.
And she was like,
I don't know how you can believe in Pan when we have God.
He's like, I need
I'm going to go taunt this cow.
I need those grapes. Grapes were none too plentiful at the manor house, and Sylvia snatched the bunch angrily from the pedestal.
Whoa.
Oh, you do not want to do
that, bitch.
She's a petty
hoe. What is she doing?
She's like, I want to eat these grapes.
Also, you don't know what those grapes, like what the situation with them is. Like, leave them.
Yeah, also, who knows how long they've been sitting out there?
She's like, they're fresh. And it's like, do you know that?
Yeah, you don't know.
She's like, how come you get grapes? I don't.
Pan, I want grapes.
Pan, share your grapes.
Pan, share those grapes.
Contemptuous annoyance dominated her thoughts as she strolled slowly homeward and then gave way to a sharp feeling of something that was very near fright. Across a thick tangle of undergrowth, a boy's face was scowling at her.
Oh, that's so creepy.
Brown and beautiful with unutterably evil eyes. Is it the same fucking boy? What the fuck?
It's the same boy.
Unutterably evil. That's great.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was a lonely pathway. All pathways around Yesny were lonely for the matter of that. And she sped forward without waiting to give a closer scrutiny to the sudden apparition. It was not till she had reached the house that she discovered that she had dropped the bunch of grapes in her flight. I saw a youth in the wood today, she told Mortimer that evening, brown-faced and rather handsome, but a scoundrel to look at. A gypsy lad, I suppose.
Rude.
Oh, come on. Mm-mm.
That's fucking racist. Don't say that word, girl.
You can't say that now.
A reasonable theory, said Mortimer.
I love how much you're doing this. I love this.
Only there aren't any gypsies in these parts at present. Then who was he? Asked Sylvia. And as Mortimer appeared to have no theory of his own, she passed on to recount her finding of the votive offering. I suppose it was your doing, she observed. It is a harmless piece of lunacy, but people would think you dreadfully silly if they knew of it. Did you meddle with it in any way?
Oh, no.
Oh.
Asked
she absolutely
Mortimer.
Meddled.
I threw the grapes away. It seemed so silly.
What a fucking... Dude, that is so fucking mean.
And also, she's like, she did take the grapes. That was very purposeful. But then she just like dropped them when she ran away in terror.
Yeah. She's like...
She's lying.
She's lying.
Yeah.
She's lying. She was embarrassed.
She's embarrassed. She doesn't want to say, I got spooked and just ran and dropped
the grapes. Yeah, she was like, I saw some evil eyes and I... split.
Also, how did she describe the sacrifice that he left as harmlessly ludicrous or something like that?
A harmless piece of lunacy.
Can you imagine if someone said of something that you were doing that it was a harmless piece of lunacy?
Ugh. Like, you fucking patronizing bitch.
Yeah. Out the door.
Yeah. The door with you, Sylvia.
Doors open.
Said Sylvia, watching Mortimer's impassive face for a sign of annoyance.
He was so dead, his face didn't do anything.
I don't think you were wise to do that.
Oh, shit.
He said reflectively.
That's scary when he says it like that.
I've heard it said that the wood gods are rather horrible to those who molest them.
Oh, interesting use of that word.
I think he just means bother.
Yeah, I think he just means bother.
I think he just means bother. Oh,
interesting use of that word.
Horrible, perhaps, to those that believe in them. But you see, I don't, retorted Sylvia.
Why is she being so mean?
La, 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 la.
You can't touch me.
She's just too busy smiling complacently.
La, la, la.
All the same, said Mortimer in his even, dispassionate tone.
Oh.
I should avoid the woods and orchards if I were you, and give a wide berth to the horned beasts on the farm.
Oh, shit.
Oh,
he just cursed her. He just cursed her.
He's cursing her. He, like, threw, like, chicken bones at her.
He just let her know about the curse that she'd already put on herself.
Mm-hmm. That's true. He's like, your fate's sealed.
Like, well, bitch, expect to see some horned beasts. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying.
If it happens, I won't be surprised. I won't be surprised. It was all nonsense, of course, but in that lonely wood girt, Spot Nonsense seemed able to rear a bastard brood of uneasiness.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Bastard brood.
Ooh, what a sentence.
Mortimer, said Sylvia suddenly, I think we will go back to town sometime soon.
She's like, let's get the fuck out of Yasni.
I think it's time for a move.
Here's an idea I'm having apropos of nothing. Let's go back to town. Her victory had not been so complete as she had supposed. It had carried her onto ground that she was already anxious to quit.
I don't think you will ever go back to town.
Mortimer.
He seemed to be paraphrasing his mother's prediction as to himself.
Huh? His mom said something about how
he doesn't want to leave.
Oh, right. Exactly. The mom was like, well, now that you've got him to Yasni, he's not going to want to leave.
Sure. When he's an object at rest, he stays at rest.
Yes.
When in motion, what's the word I'm looking for here?
He's entropy.
Newtonian.
Yes.
Newtonian.
He's Newtonian.
Physics.
That's what I'm saying.
He obeys Newtonian physics.
Newtonian physics.
I meant he's non-Euclidean is what I meant.
He's rather like a young Newton.
But old, very old, very dead.
Southern, very presidential.
Sylvia noted with dissatisfaction and self-contempt that the course of her next afternoon's ramble took her instinctively clear of the network of woods. As to the horned cattle, Mortimer's warnings was scarcely needed, for she had always regarded them as doubtful neutrality at best.
Interesting. She's not paying attention to him saying, like, stay away from horned beasts. If someone ever said, stay away from horned beasts to me,
I'd be like, cool, I guess I live inside only.
Yeah.
I can't imagine next time I would see a horned beast. This is of the cow. Mm-hmm. Her imagination unsexed the most matronly dairy cows and turned them into bulls liable to,
she's scared,
quote, mm-hmm, see red, unquote, at any moment. The ram who fled in the narrow paddocks below the orchard she had adjusted, after ample and cautious probation, to be a docile temper. Today, however, she decided to leave the docility untested, for the unusually tranquil beast was roaming with every sign of restlessness from corner to corner of his meadow.
Wait, the mom got charged by a cow, remember? Not a bull?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck!
A low, fitful piping.
What?
As of some reedy flute was coming from the depth of a neighboring
pan flute.
It's like, she's like, holy fucking shit. That's fucking pan flute.
Oh my god. I angered your fake fucking god.
I mean, do you want the grapes back? I'll get you
the grapes. I don't know where that dropped off.
I can get it in town. You sacrilegious little jerk.
There seemed to be some subtle connection between the animal's restless pacing and the wild music from the wood. They're singing along.
By the way, Pan is terrible on the flute. Like, we call it a pan flute, but he's very bad at it.
He literally just holds it up to his face and goes...
Everyone is humoring him. He does not know how to play.
No one wants to anger him. He's a god.
Who would care for another song? I'm fine.
A ballad then.
Sylvia turned her steps in an upward direction and climbed the heather-clad slopes that stretched in rolling shoulders high above Yasni.
Oh my god.
She had left the piping notes behind her, but across the wooded combs at her feet, the wind brought her another kind of music, the straining bay of hounds in full chase.
What?
They don't have horns. She should be fine.
Unless it's the boy from the previous story.
Oh my god.
Yasni was just on the outskirts of Devon and Somerset County.
Oh my god.
And the hunted deer sometimes came that way.
Oh no.
Sylvia.
Deer.
Horned.
Deer.
Horned.
Oh my
horned,
god.
Beast, horned,
a
beast,
stag.
Horned. Beast. Pan.
You.
She's like, oh my fucking god. Oh my god.
Sylvia could presently see a dark body breasting hill after hill.
Oh my god.
And sinking again and again out of sight as he crossed the combs.
What?
While behind him steadily swelled the relentless chorus.
What?
And she grew tense.
Oh God, he's at the chorus. And oh, this is the first chorus.
He's like, everybody now.
Second verse, same as the first.
Everyone's like, I'm so tired. He's like, I'm a god, I never get tired, I'm immortal.
Oh no, it's true.
Who's ready for an encore?
Oh no,
I hear suggestions.
Freebird. She grew tense with the excited sympathy that one feels for any hunted thing in whose capture one is not directly interested.
You're the capture bitch.
Okay. I mean, hello. Take a look in the mirror.
Hello.
Hello.
Take a look at the man in the mirror.
And at last he broke through the outermost line of oak scrub and fern and stood panting in the open, a fat September stag carrying a well-furnished head. Horns.
Oh.
Right?
Yes. Okay. No, it has a huge thing of horns.
Just like a ton of fucking horns.
It has a bunch of horns.
So many horns.
His obvious course was to drop down to the brown pools of Undercombe and thence make his way towards the red deer's favorite sanctuary, the sea.
Oh my God.
To Sylvia's surprise, however, he turned his head to the upland slope and came lumbering resolutely onward over the heather.
That's where she is.
It will be dreadful, she thought.
Oh God.
The hounds will pull him down under my very eyes.
Oh, she's so fucking dumb.
But the music gonna happen.
No.
Oh my God. Oh, the music?
But the music of the pack seemed to have died away for a moment.
Whew.
No, that means the hounds are not after that deer anymore, and that deer has a straight line to you, girl.
Yeah.
And in its place, she heard again that wild piping, which rose now on this side, now on that, as though urging the failing stag to a final effort. Sylvia stood well aside from his path, half hidden in a thick growth of hortle bushes. I don't know.
Hortle
bushes?
Hortle bushes? I believe it said hortle bushes.
I believe it is squirtle bushes. She's playing Pokemon Go.
Yay!
And watched him swing stiffly upward, his flanks dark with sweat, the coarse hair on his neck showing light by contrast.
Oh, God.
The pipe music shrilled suddenly around her, seeming to come from the bushes at her very feet.
Oh,
and at the same moment, the great beast slewed around and bore directly down upon her.
Oh, my God!
In an instant, her pity for the hunted animal was changed to wild terror at her own danger.
Oh my God.
Here's the thing.
Just now.
It could still be pity for the hunted animal.
It could be two things.
But you are the hunted animal.
Yeah.
So you may pity yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The thick heather roots mocked her scrambling efforts at flight, and she looked frantically downward for glimpses of oncoming hounds. The huge antler spikes were within a few yards of her, and in a flash.
Fucking run. What is she doing?
In a flash, her numbing fear, she remembered Mortimer's warning to beware horned beasts on the farm.
Just then?
She had been imagining that her whole walk, and then just then she remembers it again.
She's like, oh,
now I get it.
Oh.
It's just more bad detective
work. The thing I was scared of earlier, I'm scared of again.
Still scared. And then with a quick throb of joy, she saw that she was not alone. A human figure
stood
a few paces aside, knee deep. In the hortle bushes.
Oh, God, those fucking hortle bushes.
Oh, God.
Drive it off, she shrieked.
Stupid boy.
But the figure made no answering movement.
Oh, my God.
The antlers drove straight into her breast.
What?
The acrid smell of hunted animal was in her nostrils.
But it was her.
But her eyes were filled with the horror of something she saw other than her oncoming death.
What?
And in her ears.
A bunch of grapes.
What?
Oh my God.
And in her ears rang the echo of a boy's laughter, golden and equivocal.
Holy fuck. Oh my God. My hands are sweaty.
Mine are too. Don't cross pan.
I just wiped my hands on my pants.
Not even sweaty about it. Holy crap. This guy wrote a lot from his life.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yes.
Yeah. We got a closeted gay story and we got a
large mammal plowing down a lady.
Yeah.
Man.
He's fascinated with creatures.
Holy crap.
I liked
those. Those were good stories. I liked those. Stories.
I think that second one was great. I think the first one was pretty good too.
Yeah.
But Van Cheele was such a dumb.
I was so mad at him all the time. The second one was good.
Yeah.
Like really fucking good.
Very sinister.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming and doing the show, Patrick.
Guys, yeah. I had so much fun.
Always a pleasure.
Do you have anything you want to plug?
Just those podcasts aforementioned, the same day shipping podcast that we do together.
Woo, sweaty with, palm high five. Woo,
with previous guests on the show, Ryan Mogi and Colin J. Morris. We talk about relationships as they are in fictional things, movies, comic books, TV shows, video games, and generally have a quick, funny time about it.
Yeah.
And then the Nintendo Cartridge Society podcast that I do, it comes out twice a week. We do one episode about Nintendo news and then another one about a special topic. This week, well, I don't know, I guess a couple weeks by the time this comes out. recently, we ranked the Kongs. We went cool. through and said, which of these Kongs is the worst? And which
that
of these Kongs.
That is such a Patrick so way to do that.
Just tune
holy
in
shit.
To find out.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I love NCS. It's a really good podcast. You guys should definitely check it out.
Heck and we're going to get you back on, Kelly.
Yay! Yay! That was a woo-hoo. Really passive-aggressive way, mostly aggressive, to make you get me back on.
It. I mean, the last aggressive move that you made to try to get on the show was to text me and say, I want to be on NCS.
Yeah. Yeah.
It will happen.
Awesome. Thanks so much for tuning in, you guys.
And we'll catch you next week. Keep it lit.
This has been Public Domain Theater. Saki's Gabriel Ernest and The Music on the Hill. With Lindsay Kaytai, Kelly Nugent, and Patrick Ellers.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.